everyone. Thanks so much for joining me on the Slice of Healthcare podcast. I'm your host, Jared Taylor. Joining me here today is the Nancy Brown. See how I get to say the? Because everyone knows who you are. From Oak HCFT. Nancy, I am so excited. Ran into you at Vive, at the amazing food, like food truck setup food they had. And I'm glad we're finally able to do this, but thanks so much for joining me here today.
Oh my gosh, it's my pleasure. I didn't know what I had to do. You had like my colleagues, my companies, all my friends, and I finally got an invitation. So thanks.
It wasn't, I wanted to have you on for a long time. It just, the stars aligned, right? It's, that's what a, those hamburgers will do. It's just, they make you just, you know, jump and make that podcast intro. But let's dive in. Most people know who you are in the space, but just give us a high level overview of your background and kind of what brought you to where you are today.
Oh, you'll be sorry. High level is not my forte, but I'll give you the background. So I've been in healthcare my whole career. I got out of business school years and years ago, wanted to study, the organization of healthcare. So I was, really compelled not to go to a hospital, not to go to a doctor's office, but to go to what was a staff model HMO in Boston, very similar to Kaiser. Very intrigued by the payer provider, which we'll talk a little bit about more and how that sort of informs my investment thesis. And so I very, very deliberately went to a place called Harvard Community Health Plan. We had about 1 million members. And what I learned there, it was one of those you look back and like, what an amazing set of experiences I had. I ran clinics. And to be truthful, I got out, I started like at the main desk. You know, I was coming out of business school, people were going into finance, doing all this stuff. And I got this goofy job, but worked my way up and eventually was running these multi-specialty clinics during the day, servicing about 1 million members. And then at night we were doing clinical process reengineering. And I give you this detail because it's super important. So we had 1 million members. We had 100% of their care managed by us. We had all their data in a database. And so our analytics team, who I think is still sitting somewhere in Boston, would tell us, you know, what clinical processes we needed to work on and improve. And we would spend the evenings doing two things. One is we were all sent to Japan to learn Deming methods of total quality management. So analyzing process in healthcare. And I emphasize this because people don't do this. Like this is what was going on by Lee Iacocca and others in other industries. But we were applying it and we were redefining things like hip replacement process, pediatric asthma, you know, normal deliveries of babies, all of these areas that became like absolute sentinel experiences for defining quality healthcare. So that was the basis for everything. It was a long time ago. I'm not going to tell you when, because I bet it was you were not born. But back then, there was no tech at the point of service. And so that led me to get into thinking about technology. That's a whole podcast in itself, which was the creation of the first ever electronic medical record. Epic was a scheduling system. Cerner was a lab system. People didn't really think about decision support at the point of service the way we needed to. And so that was my sort of pivot out of nonprofit and becoming an entrepreneur. Had three companies, and two of them are owned by McKesson. The one in the middle is Athena Health. That's where I met Annie Lamont, who I work for now, Annie and Andrew, who run Oak. They were our lead investors at Athena.
And we had Andrew on it was last year sometime. So it's great to finally have you on, and eventually we'll have to have Annie on as well, make it a trifecta.
Of course.
Super excited. And we've had your portfolio companies. Faye's been on a few of our shows. Yay. From Firefly. And it's awesome. You do have a really cool portfolio. Like it's not just good companies. You have some really like charismatic folks that are founders in there too. And that makes sense too. All the early ties to like Athena Health, right? Like you have a good relationship with John Bush and that makes sense. So talk me through, I guess, real quick, what do you think about our current state of healthcare today then in 2024?
Oh my gosh. You know, having done this for 30 plus years, and I don't have another 30 years in me. I have a lot of years, but not another 30. There are days I'm completely disappointed in where things stand, particularly when I get a call from someone who can't access healthcare, doesn't have the, or haven't had the best treatment, or you know, are having some issue with just the way things are being processed and managed, hearing about how it lacks a consumer orientation with a little attitude of like, what have you been doing, Nancy, for all these years? It's difficult. And then I have another side of me, which is completely hopeful because we have really made a lot of strides. And I could do, again, a whole podcast on each of these topics, but I'll tell you one of the things that makes me most hopeful is the kind of talent that we're attracting into trying to fix healthcare. When I got out of business school and went to healthcare, nobody went into healthcare. They didn't even know what that meant. They're like, what, you're not a doctor. What does it mean you're in healthcare? So now this is a very attractive place to be as like a top technologist, as a top operator, as a top thought leader. And I think with that talent that's come into this market, we can be more hopeful.
There's still so many, though, areas that are blocking maybe where innovation could go, right? What are some of those areas that you still see as blockers today? And, you know, I know some of your portfolio companies are continuing to find those right paths to, you can't necessarily get fully past the blockers, but you can mitigate them, right? Like, obviously payers still have so much of a say in everything happening in healthcare innovation. Epic has still such a strong market share over the space as well. Like how do companies, let's say the early stage startup, for instance, right? Like how do they dive into healthcare and be able to compete with these different blockers that exist?
Yeah, that's a great question. As you were forming it, I was thinking maybe we should talk about the things that aren't blockers, but let's go with blockers. So it's one of the things I talk about in terms of people coming into healthcare that are not from healthcare or investors who come in. Like you can't observe this market from a distance. You can't have just gone to Harvard or Wharton and learned about it and then come in and have it make sense because there's a lot of things that are not intuitive. Okay, there's a lot of things about the ecosystem. So the thing, the blockers are the roles of different players in the market. I live in Boston, so I can pick on Boston. You know, there is no shortage of people to fill beds at Mass General, right? And I don't want to pick on, I'm on a lot of committees over at Mass General. They're wonderful, but their objective is to serve the needs of patients in the hospital. Let's just say, just for the ease of discussion. So you don't have, you know, you have all of these different silos, which we've talked about endlessly, and they're not just silos in terms of tech, they're silos in terms of economics or silos in terms of their point of view. So on and so forth. And then you have a lot of regulation that has to be adhered to. We have a company, speaking of Athena Health, quite a good group of folks from Athena ended up at Devoted, which is our MA plan. And we spent a lot of time in the conception of Devoted with the team there. And people said, do we need another MA plan? I'm like, oh, yes, we do. We need one that really, really is focused on fundamentally changing how they're delivering care to their patients versus just working within the constructs of stars ratings, for instance. But the reality is they have to work within a construct that's been created by government. And so, and that's not always, it's always required. It's not always the thing that leads to the most quality. So you have to be very respectful of what is the existing ecosystem here. And you'll see, you know, just so it's not hard to figure out. I don't want this podcast to be a connect the dots, try to figure out what Nancy's talking about. We have made a choice in the vast majority of our investments not to try to go into the existing world and change it, but to create a new world. So we have very few things that are facing health systems, meaning let's go in and try to get existing doctor's offices and existing hospitals and others to change. We have really decided to either create net new delivery systems or capabilities or net new insurance companies like Devoted, or to be an overlay to fill in the gaps that exist in the current infrastructure. And there's many good examples that we can get to of that. So we're trying to figure out how to really show an optimal cost quality equation beside or over the top of the existing healthcare infrastructure.
You know, as your portfolio companies and these outside companies are building it, I would be curious to hear too, like, what does your relationship look like with your founders in your portfolio company? And, you know, I was just, not that this compares, but I've watched for like the fourth time. I always like to have it on in the background, the Super Pumped series about Uber. Yes. And it's just, I know the person's, I've heard a lot of things that the Bill Gurley is not like the person that's playing
that's
him in
portrayed.
There. Yeah. But like what, but the thing I took away from it is how concerned that Bill Gurley was with the relationship he had with his founders. And what does that relationship look like with you? Every time I see you talking to a founder, you're smiling or laughing, which is amazing. So, but yeah.
It's amazing. I mean, I'll start with like, look at me, I'm lighting up. It's like asking me to talk about my children. And I don't mean that in a, you know, it like these are my children. I just mean that I'm that proud and honored to be able to work with these CEOs. You know, I was an operator. I dealt with investors that didn't know things and would come, you know, come to a board meeting and kind of come up with ideas that were not grounded in reality, that were not helpful. So when I switched over from being an operator to being in this role, I had to find my footing because you're actually not part of the management team, but we want to be value added, meaning the companies that we invest in can get money anywhere. It's not about getting money, but they want to, they've learned they have to get money. Getting money is just one, is the admission ticket. And then, you know, and then they need to get a lot of help. And so, you know, my role at Oak, as are some of the other folks there, we have people who are very strong in different areas. Mine is hopefully being the person they look across the table at and see similarities to themselves. So I can have conversations about, you know, I'll use the term, probably shouldn't use the term, but the bipolar nature of being a CEO. And I said, I remember the days I would walk out and, you know, we were doing Athena. I was like, wow, we are all that. Like, look at us. And then the next day I'd be like, oh my gosh, we're complete frauds. Everyone's going to find out. And that's just normal. And so being able to support our CEOs from a mental health standpoint, an emotional standpoint, a roller coaster standpoint, I mean, and particularly in the environment we've been in the last couple of years, it has been relentless amount of stress on top of running a business and COVID and so many other things, Silicon Valley Bank, Roe v. Wade, you know, just endless. So there's that. And then there is the role we play of blocking and tackling. So my happiest days when you see this big smile on my face, and I get to do this with one of our companies called Imagine Pediatrics, which is to do clinical design. So I'm not doing the clinical design, but I still remember enough that they humor me and let me talk about, we're trying to solve this problem with the sickest of the sick kids that are home on ventilators. You know, how should we think about these processes? How should we think about the ecosystem around it? Who in this world that we're working in is going to be working against us? Who's going to be working for us? So we're actually that deep into some companies if we can be helpful. We don't require it if we can be helpful. We have a tremendous talent team. We have placed double-digit C-suite people within our companies, and I could not live without them, led by Leah Scanlon, just amazing. So we are constantly, as I sit here, I see texts coming in one after another about a CFO candidate that we're looking at. So unbelievable. And then the most exciting thing we get to do lately, and then, you know, you can extrapolate, by the way, we do finance, we do scaling, we do all these things, tech review. What's the greatest thing now that we have around 50 plus active portfolio companies is we have a lot of similarities. So you mentioned Faye Rotenberg Bush, you know, if she wants to talk to someone who's doing something similar, we have so much familiarity with, we've contracted with United, we've built a tech stack, we've failed at this or we succeeded at that. So the peer-to-peer support that we can provide or we can make connections for is just fantastic. So we go deep. I think people are surprised, and I think it's easy to say, like, what do those venture capitalists do anyway? But we are deep in the companies every day.
Yeah, so Firefly was one of the first companies at my last startup that we ended up working with in the credentialing space. And it was funny because I met up for coffee with Steve Papa, and yeah, he asked me to drive him home. And I didn't know he was married to Shirley Mills, who is the CFO at Firefly. Yes. So then he's asked me all these questions. And then I get an email like later from Shirley saying, like, Steve's my husband and told me about this. Let's talk about how we can work together. But it was that, like, early on, I think when Firefly was just starting, we were building a relationship with that team. And it's been incredible to see how they've grown and evolved. It's just awesome, that phase there too, because so this is actually my next question for you. When you look at your portfolio companies, How important is that advantage? As a founder, I never understood why all of the VCs in the early days, why is like a second time or multi-time founder? It's because you know all the fires to put out before they even happen, right? You have a lot of like seasoned, like this is not their first battle CEOs in your portfolios. So like, what is that persona? Like, what are you looking for? It, 'cause I know it's the company, but it's also these individuals, right? That you either want to place in there or find the right person from the start. What is that persona? What does that person look like?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. Sorry for the sirens here in New York City today. It's very New York City like. So there's almost nothing more important. I mean, if we and sometimes we'll find someone who's a phenomenal leader and maybe doesn't have the best market idea or hasn't fully evolved a market idea, and we'll actually help them because finding the leader is even more important. And when I say finding the leader, I think we have a very distinct profile at Oak, and hopefully it's the same profile that we live up to, which is somebody who is has humility. This is critical. It's very rare, and I'll kind of dive in. It's very rare for whatever someone says they're going to do with their business to be 100% what it ends up being, which means they have to be incredibly open-minded to evolving their own ideas. And so it's very important that, you know, in, that they are capable of doing that and they're capable of collaborating. If we can't collaborate with the leaders, then sort of what is the point of us being the investor? They have to have, I mean, it's terrific, particularly in healthcare, to have experience, because there is, you know, it's not good when you start talking about capitation and people think you're talking about beheading people, you know, like it's like to know some of the core information about healthcare and how it works, because defining a healthcare problem is not hard. We all know those problems. You know, my daughter's now 22, but when she was 10, I was starting this, she was like, she knew the problems. It's how do you solve them? And I can't tell you how many people come to me without any institutional knowledge of the fact that they're going to have to live within an existing environment, you know, of all the things we already talked about. So ability to collaborate, ability to lead, ability to hire people. I have never, ever in my life understood people who don't want to hire people that are threatening to them in terms of talent. And maybe just for me, I knew I had a lot of missing talent. So I always surrounded myself with amazing folks and just loved to let them fly. And so it is about the ability to bring together a team. And by the way, it's the ability to make changes to that team. We have a lot of folks who have what I would call their college team, like a bunch of their friends from college, like probably really good colleges, probably really smart folks, but they have to evolve that team over time, which means making changes that are difficult to make. So really recognizing those strengths and weaknesses. And then, you know, obviously they have to come with a market idea. You know, as I say, sometimes they don't, but most of the time they do. And it has to be like the total addressable market. There are some basic things that it just astounds me that people come to us missing, like understanding, you know, what that market is, how you'd get to it, you know, what people are going to be in your path, historical knowledge of what's happened. But you're right on in that these CEOs and the surrounding C-suite are everything to us. You mentioned Faye, you've interviewed Faye. She is incredibly bright, incredibly tenacious, never gives up. And by the way, I'll point out that a lot of these companies are doing net new markets. So she's evolving. You know, this Firefly is not Teladoc. It's not Amwell. It is an entirely new category of company. And it's exhausting, having been there with a few of my companies, to be a market maker. And that's the times when you're like, oh my gosh, is anyone going to understand this? And I have a lot of market makers and they've been incredible.
So that being said, right, it takes time to build a market, to be that market maker. Do you set any sort of like, what are your expectations when you invest in a company in terms of like how long it is before there needs to be some sort of, and I know this can change, right? But I mean, with so many portfolio companies that are doing these amazing things, is there like an average timeline though that I'm not saying it like this date comes around and you're telling them, okay, it's time to start thinking about this, but What does that look like? And what is that conversation like with founders? Because I'm sure you've had to have it.
That's a great question. I mean, I'm smiling just because none of this is like, I mean, there's a formula, but it's not one that is consistently applied in the real world. So I think when people are looking to get money from a venture capitalist, they need to know the answer to this. Are you a short-term investor? Are you a long-term investor? Do you stay? Do you like, you're like, oh my gosh, we're at 10 years. I've got to get out. And we consider ourselves right long-term investors, or I should say we're right-term investors, which means we deal with, sometimes it can be as complex for someone who wants to get out early as it is for someone who wants to get out late, right? Because, you know, there's math. I guess you figured that, you know, we get in at a certain price. And when we get in, we think about what it's going to take for us to get to, you know, our multiple. And we run numbers against, you know, what we can best assume will be the growth rates. And there's also the rate at which you're going to become profitable. So there's all these things that you're deciding in a big bubble in a market that's emerging. So, and then one thing I love is I used to run growth for these kind of companies. And my board members would come in and want precision. And I'm like, this is an emerging market. We cannot give you precision on this. We can tell you what variables have impacted it. So we look at that. And I have to say, the vast majority of time, it takes longer, right? And things happen. COVID happens. You know, economic slowdown happens. You know, the change in focus happens. And so there's a lot of variables that you have to take into consideration. And so I think there, you know, we tend to, you know, have a good sense of what our companies are, what their trajectory looks like. We also have a good sense of, when they might get to a point in the rare instance where they've kind of, they need to be part of something else, you know. And then I should, you know, be really remiss not to say that we take the lead of our CEOs. So we don't show up and suggest it's time to sell or it's too early to sell. We listen to what they're looking for or what they're looking to do. And then we work with them to sort of make that happen. But if the market tells you anything, the one we're living through right now, it's like timelines are your best assumption at the time based on the variables that exist. And when all the variables change, so do the timelines.
Super interesting. And I love seeing you like smile and I like that you said there is a formula, but it's not like you always apply it. And that makes total sense, right? I was almost expecting you to say something to that regard and hoping, because I feel like that's another like check mark that your firm gets to have, right? When you help with talent, okay, you have an understanding around timeline. Cause it's, I've heard some horror stories of firms too. You know, that maybe are always pushing for a certain outcome. So really, really interesting. What area as we wrap up here, last question for you, what part of healthcare right now are you super interested in? If you had to pick one, I know that's tough, but.
So tough. So we have a theme and we're continuing it. You know, I know Andrew talked about it when he was on here. So we're big into the cost equality equation. And just to be clear, to kind of bring us full cycle to my, you know, first job and going to Japan and doing all that. So basically, if we look for an outcome, like one of our first investments was Brad Smith's company called Aspire on palliative care. You know, there was getting people into palliative care appropriately is a win-win for everyone. So that's the other thing that's very clear to us, is finding something that the patient first and foremost wins on, and no one gets hurt. It's only goodness across the ecosystem of payers, providers, and patients. And all of our companies have the same thing, which is somewhere in the country, someone's developed a protocol that if you apply it, gets to the optimal cost-quality equation. The usual problem, and this is, boy, a problem in Boston, is it's only applied within that institution, because this is a cottage industry at the heart of this. You know, it's a small industry that is doing it in each of their little tribal groups. So we continue to do this, which is to find these, you know, true innovators in Brad Smith and others that are finding populations. And this gets to sort of our continued focus. So we are doing these I used to call it subpopulation management. We have different terms we use, but really finding these subpopulation, whether it's pediatric, Medicaid-facing pediatric kids that are on ventilators and feeding tubes that are in serious need of lots of treatment at home, but not coordinated, or the rural populations that Main Street is looking at and growing. And we will just continue to look for these things. And they're in different disease states and different cohorts. And we will continue to gravitate towards the most complex patients. And I'll just say this as a final word on behalf of the amazing CEOs that we have. I was at a conference, met a lot of conferences, and one of our CEOs was there speaking on a panel with someone from UnitedHealthcare, and the UnitedHealthcare president got up and thanked the CEO for starting his company. Said, "You are representing an ability to manage a set of patients we could never, ever get to." Okay, that is when you know you have a home run, which is you have the payers, the insurance plans, the employers wanting something. You're not talking them into something. They want something, and it's been elusive how to do it. And the solution for doing it is incredibly complex. And our companies are bringing those complex solutions to market and scaling them with margin. So more of the same.
I love it. I'm so glad that we were able to have you here and hear some of your thoughts on a bunch of things, healthcare, and hopefully we can have you on again in the future, maybe on a panel, which would be a lot of fun, and wishing you all the best. But thanks so much for joining us here today.
Thank you. And Jared, good job on this. I'll come back anytime and bring some of my favorite CEOs.
I love it. Thanks.
Great. Thank you.